Okay, now it's time for Ask an Astronomer with Dr. Tim O'Brien, who's coming to us from Poland, Turin in Poland. Is that right? Hi, Tim, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, fantastic.
In sunny Turin.
Sunny Turin. Why are you in Poland?
Actually, a conference, a symposium for the European VLBI network, which is the network of radio telescopes across Europe that we connect together to make very sort of sharp images of astronomical objects in the radio.
Right, so carry on the tradition of astronomers finding nice places to go for their conferences.
That's right, yeah, it's a lovely place. Birthplace of Copernicus.
Birthplace of Copernicus, of course.
Yeah.
A question comes from Alex. He's got a question about what to look at in the night sky. How can you find out what's up in the night sky? How can you help?
Yeah, so I think this guy, Alex, just bought himself a small telescope, and he was wondering, he'd been told that there were no planets around for him to look at, which he's a bit disappointed about. But he wanted to know what else there might be to look at in the night sky. Now, what I would suggest, particularly if you've got a computer at home, an ideal thing to do is to download one of the free software packages that will actually tell you exactly what's up in the night sky at any time. So the one we often recommend is a pretty one that's completely free as well, which is a big advantage, is something called Stellarium.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Stellarium. And you can download that from the web, www.stellarium.org. And what you do is you put in your location on the Earth, and you know, it takes your computer time, and it will actually generate a sort of simulated view of the sky from your location, and you can sort of, it'll show it you for the current time, but you can also sort of fast forward and, you know, look at what it's going to be like later in that same night or the next day or the next week or in fact the next 100 years or whatever you're interested in. So that's really probably the best answer. I mean, the other things you can do, of course, we have our own night sky bit of the Jodcast,
of course, yes.
And the night sky web pages that go with it. So that's another place to look for ideas on what might be up and about.
Right. And so how easy is it to go from what you look up on these Stellarium programs to actually going out at night and then trying to figure out, well, what's what up there? Can you print these things out? What do you do?
Yeah, what you ought to do really is to get a very basic feel for what the night sky looks like. So really that means sort of identifying some of the major constellations. And you've really got to get yourself attuned to the sort of scale of these things on the sky. So have a feel for, you know, if you were trying to recognize, you know, you go for a major constellation like the Plough, you know, like Ursa Major.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, identify that. That's always visible. It's always going to be in the north, because it never sets below the horizon. So that's one to look out for, first of all. But then other ones like Orion, for example, or the Square of Pegasus or something. Try and identify some of these major constellations. And then you'll get a reasonable idea from one of these software packages. You can sort of identify where the object is that you're looking for with respect to some of these other stars. So it's actually quite good fun to sort of do this thing called star hopping, where you basically look at a sky map like you might get on one of these packages or one of the websites, and it would show you where the location of the object you're interested in is relative to nearby stars. So the thing to do is to, like, you know, find the stars, you know, almost visually without your telescope that you're interested in, the sort of constellation, and then you might go to either a pair of binoculars or maybe the finder scope on your telescope, so you get a reasonably wide field of view, find the star you already know, and then you sort of hop along from one star to the next, going to fainter stars until you find the, you know, the particular object, whether it be a galaxy or a planetary nebula or something like that you're interested in. I mean, that's quite satisfying, but it's, you know, a little time consuming.
But at least it gives you a baseline, a background of what the night sky looks like, and you can navigate your way from place to place without using a telescope,
yeah,
without anything, just getting a feel for what it looks like up there.
Yeah, I think it's the way to start, really. The other thing Alex was asking about was how to use. He had the, you know, you're saying there's two dials on the telescope.
Right. Yes.
What do they mean? You know, how do you dial in the position of your source? Basically, that depends on what type of, how your telescope is mounted. You know, how it's attached to the tripod or whatever you've got it on. And there's two main types of telescope mount. There's something called an alt-az mount, altitude and azimuth. So that would be where the telescope just moves relative to the horizon. So you basically, one of the dials would represent the number of degrees above the horizon that the object is. So that's called altitude or elevation.
Right.
And then the other dial will be used for sort of turning the telescope around the horizon. So if you started with the telescope pointing north, you'd be at what's called 0 degrees azimuth.
Right.
And then as you go towards the east, directly east would be 90 degrees, directly south 180, and west 270, and then back to 360 or zero when you point back north again. So those two angles, which those two dials would represent, would give you the current position of any object on the sky.
So basically, altitude is up and down, and azimuth is around and about. So
around. yeah.
Okay.
And the only problem with that, is that obviously because the Earth is spinning round all the time, the position of an object on the sky relative to the horizon changes. It rises in the east, moves across the sky through the south, generally sets in the west. So if you looked up the altitude and azimuth of the thing you were interested in on one of these packages, it would tell you the altitude, but that would only be true at the instant you were looking it up. So if you want something that's a bit more, less ephemeral than that, then you need to use something like something called the equatorial coordinate system.
Right.
And that would rely on you having an equatorial mount.
So this is different to an altitude mount. This is the second type of mount now.
Yeah, well, the way you can recognize it, basically, it's as if the base of the telescope is tilted at an angle, and that angle has to be set to be equal to your latitude on the Earth.
Right.
And it basically corrects for your latitude, so that then you can point, if your telescope's pointed straight up relative to this angled mount, then you're actually pointing straight at the point directly above the Earth's north pole. And if your telescope was pointed sort of parallel to this angled mount, you'd be pointing at stars or objects that are directly above the Earth's equator. And then as the Earth spins round, your telescope just has to follow it in one direction, parallel to the sort of the angled mount of the telescope. So those two dials that you've got on the telescope then become the two coordinates in this new coordinate system, this equatorial coordinate system on the sky, which is actually just like latitude and longitude on the Earth, but sort of expanded out onto the sky. So you might call it celestial latitude and longitude, but astronomers call the equivalent of latitude is called declination, mm-hmm. and the equivalent of longitude is right ascension. And those two numbers you would get in your software package as well, and they would be sort of true forever, roughly, give or take the fact that the Earth's axis wobbles a bit. So, but generally, that would be true. You don't have to worry about what time of day or what time of night it is when you go to look and where you set that into the dials.
All right, well, that's pretty good, isn't it? So if you had your favorite stellar package open in front of you, perhaps before you go out observing, and you see that, oh, okay, so I know that Orion is high in the sky this time of year, and there's a number of interesting things in there, let's say it's a nebula maybe or a globular cluster or something like that. You note down, let's say, the equatorial coordinates in right ascension and declination, and then what, you go out to your telescope and just dial it up or what?
Yeah, effectively. I mean, it depends. I mean, assuming your telescope isn't computer controlled, because of course if it's computer controlled, then you just type in, either type in the coordinates, type in the name or whatever, and the telescope will drive to it. Assuming you've got to do that manually, then you'll look on one of the dials, you'll have degrees, and it will go from there'll be a 0 degrees in the middle, and there'll be a plus 90 at one at the top and a minus 90 at the bottom. And that's basically, plus 90 would be the north celestial pole directly above the north pole. 0 would be directly above the equator. Minus 90 would be directly above the south pole. And then the other dial would be this right ascension one. And typically that's going to be in units of time, which is perhaps a bit confusing. So it'll be 24 hours around a full circle, which is equivalent to 360 degrees. And it's obviously because the Earth spins around in 24 hours. So astronomers tend to use that, use time units for that. So you'll see right ascension in so many hours and minutes and so on. If your right ascension dial is calibrated in hours, you can go straight to it. If your right ascension dial is in degrees, like 0 to 360, you'll have to work out that, for example, if the right ascension was 6 hours, that's a quarter of 24 hours, so you'd be a quarter of the way around 360 degrees, so you'd be 90 degrees, basically. So you'd be 90 degrees round.
Typically, most people have a very simple telescope, probably not computer-controlled drives on the mount or anything like that. This is a little telescope on a little tripod, and from from what I remember when I was fooling around with similar sort of telescopes, what you'd do is that you'd try and work out the where the object is that you want to look at relative to something which you can identify quite easily. So
yeah.
A bright star or a bright group of stars, and you'd look at that through a little finder scope and then go left a bit, down a bit, left a bit, down a bit, and then hopefully at some point in the field of view you would just work your way towards the object that you want by sort of going from point to point to point, which you can recognize from your star map, and then go, well, it should be just down and to the left from where I am currently, so maybe that's what I'm looking at.
I think I'd recommend, I mean, that's the star hopping idea. You hop from one star to the next to find the object you're interested in, and I think I'd recommend that as the thing to try and do. I mean, that's really only if you're looking for these, you know, particularly faint things. I mean, if you're looking at something, of course, you know, it's great to look at some bright objects like Jupiter or Saturn or the Moon or something like that. You know, you're going to get a lot out of that. One of the things that was up at the moment in the east, sort of earlier in the evening, was the Andromeda Galaxy, for example.
Mm.
And, you know, that's bright enough to actually see with the unaided eye if you're in a dark sky location. But certainly through a small telescope or even binoculars, you're going to see that. You're going to find that fairly easy. That's a good test of this star hopping thing. You sort of start at the top left of the square of Pegasus and hop a few stars along and a bit to the right, and sure enough, there it'll be. But, yeah, as you get better, you can sort of, you know, find some famous other nebulae and galaxies in the same way. It is quite, you know, it can take a while for some of the fainter ones, but, you know, it's pretty satisfying when you actually find them.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a couple of the planetarium programs, at least Stellarium anyway, the free one,
yeah.
And also the Jodrell Bank night sky pages, which are, of course, free to anyone who wants to look at those. Is there any advantage in getting some of the more commercial packages, the ones you actually have to pay for?
Well, I mean, you do get more for your money, I guess, with some of the, I mean, you get these big catalogues of other objects in there. I'm not sure I would necessarily, I've used one or two of these other things. And, you know, they are, if you have a computer-controlled telescope, for example, you can hook your telescope up to it and it will talk backwards and forwards with them, for instance. But there's much more stuff in some of these packages you pay for, I'll put it that way, a lot more information. But I'm not sure I want to recommend necessarily that people probably get one of the free ones first and see how you get on. And if you want to find out more, then you want to have a look at one of these other packages then and sort of upgrade to it, if you like.
Right. Okay, well, I think that answers Alex's questions quite nicely. So thank you very much, Tim, for that, and we'll talk to you next time.
Okay.
If you have any questions for Tim, then send them to us via the website at www.jodcast.net.